Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Organized Chaos. Organized Chaos is ESPN's newest podcast hosted by former NFL coach Rex Ryan and his former Jets and Ravens linebacker Bart Scott. The duo will be reunited in this weekly podcast with new episodes every Monday that will provide listeners with expert insight and analysis on everything happening around the league, featuring trending stories from on and off the field. That's Organized Chaos. Listen wherever you get your podcast. Also, the Peabody and Emmy Award-winning 30 for 30 film series presents Once Upon a Time in Queens, a four-part documentary event about the city, the swagger, and the wild ride of the 1986 Mets. This documentary explores the epic tale of one of baseball's most dominant and iconoclastic teams and their legendary World Series comeback. Hear from former Mets players and fans, including Daryl Strawberry, Keith Hernandez, Bill Burr, Cindy Lauper, and more. All four parts of Once Upon a Time in Queens are available to stream on ESPN Plus and the ESPN app now. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we're going to talk about what is kind of sort of the weirdest thing going on in the NFL, even though it's not a thing that's going on. But first... Oh, man, Gabe. Lamar Jackson dodged a bullet on Sunday night, Jack. Dodged a bullet. I believe you have been doing this show with me long enough that you know one axiom that I have for him. If you gonna stink as a quarterback, baby, do not do it on national television. I recommend you do that at a 1 o'clock kick or on one of them 4 o'clock games that you only go to on the Sunday ticket when the game that everybody else is going to be watching just ain't really hit.
Is that like the equivalent of Pac-12 after dark?
Yeah, I mean, the difference is on that is if you lose, you lose, and you're going to fall in the polls. Like, the consequences are going to be what they are. In the NFL, they just going to talk about you. Like, I remember in Cam Newton's second year in the league, he played his first nationally televised game on a Thursday night. I want to say it was against the Giants. And he put out a stinker, right? He played badly. And then he had, that's back when he was doing the press conferences where he'd be all sad and mopey, you know?
I don't know. I don't see what the problem is.
You know, that kind of stuff. Like, he'd be out there doing all of that. And I remember I did a round the horn. It was somewhere toward the middle of the season. I can't remember who else was on the panel other than my man, Bill Plaschke. And I made the point as we were going through, and I was like, you know, when you actually go back and look at it, Cam's only had 2 bad games. And Bill was like, yo, I said, I noticed the same thing. Like, he just went back and looked at it and we're like, he only had 2 games. We were all ready to throw him overboard because the bad game was on national television. Like, one, I feel like the dirty secrets about the NFL for most people is they're just watching whatever game is directly in front of them. Most people are not getting the Sunday ticket, right? They're watching whatever the local game is. They're watching the 4 o'clock game. They're watching the Sunday night game. Like, that's where they wind up going. And so we have these wild fluctuations of opinion based on those things, or people wind up having these opinions often based on games that nobody's actually watching. So, like, take Cam in 2012. They were reading box scores from his rookie year when he's putting up the unreal numbers, and then they get out there and see him, and then, you know, also, remember, he's black. Don't forget that part. And everybody bails, right? Black dude don't get no whole lot of benefit of the doubt on this one, right? Like, that's just kind of how it goes. It's all of a sudden they figured you out and everything else. But you can't do it on national television. Now, the Ravens had back-to-back games to start this season on national television. Now, one of them seemed like it would work out okay for them because they were playing against the Raiders, right? Like, you figured that, you know, they beat the Raiders, but then the next one was against the Chiefs, which had been the thorn in their sides up until this point. That's the third game coming up here that they had on Sunday night playing against them since Lamar Jackson took over as quarterback, and they just hadn't pulled off a W. It's almost like the Chiefs are really good or something, right? It's a crazy thing, you know, but they talked about the Chiefs being their kryptonite and all that stuff. Cause I think that starting at quarterback Jackson was something like 30-6 or something like that against teams that were not the Chiefs. And then they had the losses to them, man. They got out there and Lamar threw an interception, a pick six in the first quarter, and it looked bad on first watch. And then you saw it and Sammy Watkins has slipped and you can see how that thing happened. Okay, cool. The second interception was indefensible, right? He just threw it up there in the middle of the field. And Collinsworth made the point that Tyrann Mathieu had fooled him, right? Made him think that he was going to be on the other side of the field. And then he came over and got to it. But that ain't no explanation for the other two dudes that were standing right there, right? Like, it was just a bad pass. There was no way around it. So you get into the second half and they're down double digits. And it was worth noting that unlike the game against the Raiders, the run game was actually hitting on something, right? Like, the pass blocking was a lot better. Because, look, I'm telling you this, man. The one thing in the NFL, if there's nothing else, that I will look you dead in the face and be like, you know, I can't really explain to you what's going on here, is offensive line play. Like, I'm just not qualified to do that. And some things about it I know to be true, but I don't fully understand exactly why they're true or true to the extent that they are. And one of them clearly is playing left tackle and playing right tackle are two completely different things. Because your man Big Al was over there playing right tackle last week and just getting handled, totally handled. Ronnie Stanley couldn't play this week, and so they moved Big Al to left tackle, and suddenly things looked like they made a lot more sense, which, by the way, is going to create a significant dilemma for them when Ronnie Stanley, their actual left tackle, comes back, because Big Al can't play right tackle, it appears. So I don't know what's going to happen with Big Al when this all comes around. But either way, the line didn't look bad. Like, it was turning into a bit of a no-excuses situation, at least on offense, for the Ravens. The defense obviously did not play particularly well against the Chiefs, except, I mean, what I'm supposed to say about that? Like, for real. What am I supposed to say about that? Because I give this to Andy Reid. Andy Reid figured out, in a way, it's kind of the Chip Kelly thing. And also, in a way, it's kind of just like old wishbone type stuff for what everybody's trying to figure out schematically on offense, is how to put together an offense that doesn't necessarily require the players to be great. But if I can just find a bunch of fast dudes, we can make this work. Because fast dudes aren't that hard to find. It's dudes that are big and fast that are hard to find, you know? But like in college, you got the right offense, like what Chip is doing up there in Oregon. I mean, yeah, you get like DeAnthony Thomas, and he's a five-star guy that comes in. But like LaMichael James, a dude like that, that's a three-star recruit. You can go find you a bunch of these little fast three-star recruits and make it work. Man, the Chiefs be out there with these little bitty receivers that I'd never heard of until they started playing for the Kansas City Chiefs. And all they got to do is just go out there and be fast. Mahomes going to find you. Mahomes throwing them crazy passes. You see that one touchdown he threw, like body turned all the wrong direction, off the wrong foot, just 35 yards down the field, just a strike.
That's what they tell you not to do.
Yeah. What can you tell Patrick Mahomes that he can't do? Everything that you tell everybody else, like, yo, you're not good enough to do that. What is the thing that you look at him and say, nah, man, you're just not good enough to do that? Because he'd be out there doing that stuff when you don't even have to. You know what I'm saying? It's like he just got to keep himself entertained. Stop himself from getting bored. And every now and then that means throwing like a no-look 20-yard pass or something like that, right? He's Jordan. Part of him being Jordan is like being that good. But I mean, even in terms of like just the way he played, like one thing I thought that when The Last Dance came out was probably helpful for people who did not watch Jordan in real time. And it's a thing also just because basketball players don't play the same way anymore, but it's body control, right? Like it's all that going, hanging in the air and doing the crazy finger roll and like going up, hearing the whistle, turning around in the air, throwing it behind you, going off the glass for the layup. And like today's game doesn't allow for that. Somebody's too close and gonna come pitch that out the sky at this point. But Mahomes does Jordan-like body control stuff at NFL quarterback. And doing that kind of stuff is so completely different, throwing the ball down a field versus I just got to flip this up with my wrist and hope it lands soft. Like, it's nuts. He's Jordan. There's just no way around it. So either way it goes, all that stuff I can tell you about the Chiefs, none of that matters if you Lamar and y'all come out here and you lose this game. And on top of that, the Ravens apparently listened to y'all on the internet and did the thing with the Omar whistle when he came out there. You know what I'm saying? Like, they went and did that. I just also want to make this point for all y'all on the internet. And I could be, you know, this don't apply to every single one of y'all, but I do think it applies to a lot of y'all. I understand you didn't get LeVar Burton on Jeopardy, but they listened to you and they gave you the whistle. And let's be honest with you. that whistle gonna make you a whole lot happier than LeVar Burton hosting Jeopardy, because you ain't really care about that. You know what I'm saying? Michael K. Williams died. Rest in peace. That's where your heart was, you know? And we got that. Just saying, y'all can find something new to try to campaign for and make happen on the internet. Y'all should have got started on the Emmys a little bit sooner. I see all the white folks won. Anyway, Lamar needed that one because you knew what it was going to be, especially after those picks. You knew what it was going to be if they didn't win this one.
Yeah, I was excited for Foxworth because he was at the game, right?
Oh, he was?
Yeah, on Friday, he was talking about how he was a little apprehensive because he thought that they were going to get smoked.
That's right. Yeah, nah, man, they got that done because I don't think they're going to be good this year. I just don't think they have the bodies, like, physically to be able to be but so good this year. And look, I've seen John Elway lead teams to top five draft picks. You know what I mean? Like, I've seen great quarterbacks take teams to not great seasons. Like, that kind of thing can happen. But man, that dude is still incredible. Like, that jump pass he threw was incredible. Another game, by the way, where I'm like, I just don't understand how you can try to make the argument that Lamar Jackson is not a pocket passer. I just don't see where you're coming from. You could be like, well, if he had to drop back 50 times, he couldn't do it. Well, lucky for him, he doesn't have to, right? Aaron Rodgers is a mobile quarterback, but if he had to do 25 carries a game, he wouldn't be able to do it. That doesn't suddenly mean that he cannot run. It's not how this goes. But no, Lamar needed that. That one right there, he was the one that needed. Whew, boy. Because look, Cleveland looked like they're the best team in that division. Either the Ravens or the Steelers are looking like they're going to come in third place in that division. And I mean, I don't care if the Browns go sign the X-Men. You finish behind them, man. Somebody got to come in the office and explain it. It's kind of like that time Wake Forest won the ACC. Half the coaches in the conference got fired within the next 2 years. Hey, like, hey, excuse is gone. Excuse is gone. What's your story? Like, somebody need to step up their game when the bums all of a sudden rise up to the top. But no, good for Lamar Jackson. Did you see that picture, by the way, the Foxworth posted of Lamar Jackson as a kid with the gold chain and the earrings?
Oh, yeah.
I'm just kind of like, I'll need to be that dude. But like, if that gold chain was real, I'm like, isn't that money you could have invested in books? Like, I don't want to be that dude, but I don't think I have to be that dude because I don't think that chain was real.
Did you see the thing with Kim Kardashian on Ellen from like the past like 4 or 5 days? They showed a picture of her baby up on the screen, big gold chain. And Ellen was like, it would be nice if that was real or something like that. And Kim, like a millisecond reaction, just quickly looked over and was like, what do you mean it's not real? That's a real chain.
Yo, there's something about fake jewelry, man. I don't know what it is. And it's really about like fake gold. Like, you out here wearing zirconium earrings. Nobody's really tripping on that. Everybody understands why you might do such a thing. But man, if I find out your gold is green, dog, oh no. No, there's no room for that. Nothing gets you brought down like your chain is not actually gold. I've been out here with fake watches that everybody knew was fake. Nobody really trip on that. But if your gold is fake, no. No love for you. And by the way, as if Kim Kardashian would not get the real chain. Why not? My thing again is, why does your child have a chain? Well, I don't know about you because you're in a different age, but like, I feel like when I was a kid, you just dress kids up like kids. Like, they look like, it was cute because they look like kids. Now y'all so damn narcissistic. Everybody wants to dress their kids up like themselves. Like, no, this is not necessary. And by the way, y'all raising a whole generation of kids that's going to be accustomed to having a collection of Jordans that they broke asses are not going to be able to pay for themselves. Just a thought. I know we were supposed to be talking about football, whatever. We'll talk about it next. Yeah. 3-2-1, you know. All right, so the Texans lost to the Browns on Sunday. Tyrod Taylor, who, as I understand it, was playing pretty well, got hurt. And now that means that the Texans need to go down the depth chart. Oh, wow, Tyrod was 10 for 11 for $125 for it. Yo, his luck is the worst. Like, did somebody run on the sideline and poke a hole in his lung again? You remember that time when they poked a hole in his lung? Yeah. Anyway, so they had to go down to Davis Mills, who went to Stanford, and he looked like a, you know, mid-round pick rookie out there. Nothing really, you know, nothing to write home about in no positive way. And so they got a game on Thursday night. Taylor's not going to play. Like, you can go ahead and chalk that up. And the question was asked, will Deshaun Watson play? Because you guys may have heard the Texans have like a top 10 quarterback on their team, but he's not playing right now. And we'll see was what the Texans said about the possibility or the prospect of Deshaun Watson playing in this game on Thursday. And you know what dawned on me about this? And Gabe, you let me know if you've seen something that I haven't seen, because I gave this a look and I didn't peep it. We don't actually know why Deshaun Watson isn't playing. You know, they just keep saying he's not going to play for non-injury related reasons. But we don't know why it is that he's not playing. And I know that a lot of people are hearing this and being like, duh, you know why it is that he's not playing. Except which you know it, what it is are you talking about here? Because we got two things that we could be talking about here. One, obviously, is the massage situation, right? And you could be saying that the NFL doesn't want him out there for whatever reason. But that's what that commissioner list is for, and they don't have him on that list. Now, I've talked about this. I talked about it on the Costa Show. I've talked about it, I think, a little bit here. But I would understand if the NFL did not want to put him on a list, because then that creates a story where right now there isn't really a story. There's a thing that some people are talking about, but it's not a big story. But if you put Deshaun Watson on that commissioner's list, now all of a sudden it's breaking news, it's running on the ticker on ESPN. They ain't gonna call me, I don't think, but they start calling somebody up to start talking about it, right? And then it becomes a thing, becomes a thing, becomes a thing. But right now, I think a lot of people barely even paid any attention to it. But the other one is, are we dealing with like an NBA situation where you are actively trying to trade a player and to preserve that player's value? You just stop putting them out there on the field. Now, with the NBA, I've always found that to be a touch problematic, because I just don't think the risk of injury is necessarily that great. And I don't think it is fair to the player who probably actually does want to play basketball, because that player is a basketball player and they like playing basketball. But in the NFL, it's a little bit of a different argument, because, yeah, the possibility of injury is much higher. I could get why you would decide that you didn't want to have him out there just to try to trade him, except for the fact that, you know, who knows if you can trade him or what it's going to take. It does sound like teams are interested. Gabe, I saw that Tua Tagovailoa's got some rib situation going on down there in Miami. And so I was watching something and they're like, let's see if the Deshaun Watson trade talks heat up. And it's like, damn, what are we doing? And I'm not asking that rhetorically. Like, I'm asking it seriously. What are we doing? What are they doing? As of this moment, none of us actually know what's going on here. All we know is they're not playing him. That's it. And nobody's given any real explanation. I can't think of any situation that's played out quite like this, where it really feels like everybody has collectively decided, yeah, we're just going to let this lay low, right? We had the story in Sports Illustrated about a month ago that Jenny Ventus wrote, where she talked to women who had been interviewed by the NFL investigators who felt like they had been blamed by the investigators, who did not feel like it was an actual fact-finding mission as much as it was finding a reason to provide some absolution for Watson, which is also interesting because when I talk to people, you know, around the league and the people who talk to more people around the league than I do, there seems to be like a general consensus that there's going to be some kind of 8-game suspension levied against Watson, like something in that range by the time it comes down or something like that. And I'm like, why do you think that? Like, the NFL is absolutely not comporting itself like an organization that wants to suspend Deshaun Watson for 8 games. Because the more games that you suspend him for, the worse you make it look, the more it becomes a thing. If you decide in this thing where we had Nick Wright on to talk about it, and Nick was like, look, I don't think there's any mystery to what's going on here. And it doesn't look like there's a great deal of mystery unless, again, you think 22 people are lying, right? That's really hard to believe. But we are extending a significant benefit of the doubt to him on this. And I think that's the safe play for a lot of people to go ahead and do. Like, I know for me, I've learned in this game, they don't give you no prize for being first about this, right? Like, there's no award for being the first one to go the hardest, and then you wind up being made a fool of on the back end. So my inclination is to be like, yeah, we still have some measure of mystery, and it doesn't even necessarily matter if I think that there's a matter of the mystery that's involved. There's just enough plausible deniability that we gotta all, like, hold back and be like, okay, I guess we're going to see what happens. But I can't believe there are teams that are still trying to, in fact, Gabe, play the music.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
Yeah, but that's where we are. But it really just hit me. We don't actually know why this dude isn't playing. We really don't know, as of right now, why Deshaun Watson is not playing. And no one has to answer that question.
Do you think they're holding out so that there's a time served thing where, okay, he's already been out. We held him out for 8 games, so then he can play right away?
Well, I mean, that argument would work for the Texans, except they're trying to get him out of there.
I just meant if he was going to stay.
Yeah. No, I get you. Maybe. I guess that, in the NCAA, that's what you do, right? In college, you make that play where you're like, no, we decided ourselves that we're not going to go to a bowl game in this season where we went 7-5 and weren't particularly interested in going to Detroit in December anyway, right? But that game you wind up playing there. I don't know. I'm just trying to think of a time that there's been a scandal that was as hot as this was when it broke. And we all just laid low about it. And now we got weird behavior going on and there's nobody really to rattle a chain about it. But what I think it comes down to, as much as anything else, is honestly not anything sinister, but this is important. And I think it's something that Joel Anderson pointed out when it came to Bishop Sycamore. This is what happens when the core of journalists is depleted. We don't have enough people on the ground on things to get out there and have somebody whose job it is to really get to the bottom of a story like this and get this figured out. If I'm not mistaken, most of the significant reporting on this has come from national people. Sports Illustrated's been strong on it. I think our shop has done some stuff on it, but I don't recall anything really thorough on this coming from the Houston Chronicle, for example. And this isn't a knock on the people who work for the Chronicle, because I'm not saying they're not doing their jobs or they're not working hard. I'm just recognizing the limitation of resources. And something that happened, and this is something that's gone on, well, in Houston, happened now over 25 years ago, is becoming a one newspaper town. The Chronicle doesn't have to worry anymore that the Houston Post has got somebody working on this and we don't want to get beat to it because there's only the Houston Chronicle. Maybe they got to worry about the Athletic, but the Athletic ain't got but so many people to be out there doing that. ESPN, we ain't got no Houston Bureau. We ain't got but so many people to be out there getting to the ground on this. So who got the time to go investigate all of this and cover the team or something like that? This is what happens with budget cuts. And this is also what's happening in news everywhere, is as you have fewer journalists and fewer people to dig and explore, as is constitutionally protected and required in order to keep these institutions accountable to anything, we don't have it. And so we just sit around here and can't nobody make nobody say, Deshaun looks healthy over there. Why is he not playing? And they just say, nah, football reasons. Okay, coach. If you haven't heard, as part of ESPN Nation, brought to you by Dr. Pepper. College football is back, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from tech.
I'm Dalvin Brown, and I cover innovation for the Washington Post. Robot vacuums are getting smarter. And as they get smarter, they're learning to avoid objects around your home. So if you leave headphones on the floor, they may see them and decide not to eat them. They can also avoid pet droppings. So if your dog poops on the floor, the robot vacuum might try to avoid it. But with features like that comes a side of privacy concerns. So I dug into that and found out that iRobot's Roomba, which is one of the latest devices with AI cameras and machine learning to see what's on the floor, the device maps out a layout of people's homes. It can see anything on the floor, but was only built to identify a couple things like cords or pet droppings And it's not so much about what it can see. It's more about what it stores and where that data goes. So iRobot has done a lot of work to keep people's private images of their homes on the device, and they encrypt those photos so that if they're hacked, people have a harder time accessing them. But what cybersecurity experts have warned about is iRobot could always decide to sell those images at some point. They may be hacked, and if they are hacked, a savvy cyber criminal might have access to images inside people's homes or layouts of their homes. So that's something that people should think about as well before they get the latest and greatest home vacuum that can identify objects left on the floor.
Let's get away from the privacy stuff for a second. Let's talk about y'all being too goddamn lazy to pick up the dog shit on your floor, on your carpet. Can we talk about that for a second, please? Oh, yeah, your Roomba will avoid the dog. How is that even coming up? How has this not been addressed before it was time for you to vacuum? What are you talking about? Also, forget about that part. Actually, don't forget about that part. Remember that part. Put a pin in that part. Add this part to the other part, which is this. Hey, man, I hate dealing with the floors at my house. I do. I can't stand it. All right? I hate, and since I left North Carolina, lived in Miami, and I lived here in New York, and the difference between these places and when I lived there is it's a carpet world down there, or it was a carpet world. Maybe they were carpet times. I have no idea, but my crib in Durham, it's carpet. That's what it was. I haven't lived in a place since then that's been about that carpet. It's been a lot of like having to actually sweep the floors. My watch that be tracking my fitness be telling me sweeping the floor, that be counting as a workout. You know what I'm saying? Like when you get out there and start, you know, getting out there, it's work to be done sweeping the floor. Like I don't like sweeping the floor. And that's the kind of thing that made me pay for somebody to start cleaning my house, like straight up and down. Cause at my place in Miami, the floors were white. And so I couldn't like see the dirt, you know? And so I was like having a trouble getting it done. But you know, that's what happens when the floor is marble. You know what I'm saying?
Flex. That was a flex. Sorry.
But that was the truth, right? Like, I didn't even know the floors were marble until somebody else told me. But they're really hard to sweep yourself. It makes you become an imperialist because you need a trained expert. Anyway, I don't blame you if you don't want to sweep your floor, is what I'm saying.
What are we back in, like, the 1950s or something where we're sweeping the floor? Don't people have vacuums?
But that's what I'm saying. This isn't carpet.
Yeah, but vacuums are made for hardwood and carpet.
I've never considered doing anything like that. I don't know. I hadn't thought about that. So maybe you're onto something. However, if you too lazy to push a vacuum, that's all I'm saying. You are too lazy to push a motorized vacuum. It's not even a lawnmower. It's a vacuum. It is self-propelled. You walk back and forth a few times and it's done. You're too lazy to vacuum. But if you gotta get a robot to vacuum your floor, how were you raised?
Do you actively have to start the iRobot? Because if you're starting the iRobot Roomba, but you're not picking up the dog feces, that's the next level of laziness.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. Like, you remember that commercial? What's that woman's name? Zooey? Yeah, Zooey. And Zooey was doing this commercial for Apple. I think it was a Siri commercial with Siri first got popping. And she had like set a reminder to clean her house the next day. And somebody hit me up on Twitter and was like, how you need a reminder for that? Just look around. Like you can tell you need to clean the house. You don't need nobody else to tell you. You know what I mean? I thought that was the height of laziness. You got a little robot and you can't even pick up the dog shit yourself. You should be ashamed.
Yeah, you're reminded every time you turn the corner. Or how about you're reminded if you step in the dog crap itself?
That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. And by the way, if the vacuum's going to avoid it, shout out for the trolling robot to be like, you should pick up that dog.
Yeah, I mean, I know we're going absolute overtime on this story, but there are so many layers to this. The fact that they have a map of your house and they may or may not sell that in the future.
Yes. I didn't even get to that. Right. Like, we're not going to sell it yet. A map of my house. You're going to sell the blueprint to my house.
For what purpose?
Man, listen. I'm so, like, do you do any sleep tracking stuff?
I don't. I probably should.
I do, but I feel like I should stop. And the reason is somebody knows when I'm awake and somebody knows when I'm asleep, and it ain't Santa Claus. Like, I thought about this, like, yo, I can see all kinds of terrible ways that this could be put to use. That's why you can't let them apps talk to each other. By the way, they running a con on that, because I damn sure have told Instagram, do not follow me on no other apps. But them ads sure look like they've been on my Safari.
Anytime you think that you've got a personal relationship where things can be private between you and an app, you're wrong.
No, but they're like, yo, do you want us to track? No, but these ads look just like they did when you were.
All right, this next story comes from Health.
This is John Schulenberg, professor of psychology at the University of Michigan. The findings I'm going to mention come from the National Monitoring the Future study that we conduct here at the University of Michigan. These findings were recently published in our annual monograph series available on our website. So the study includes annual surveys of national samples of college students and young adults. These annual surveys have been ongoing since 1980, and we have been funded by the National Institute of Drug Abuse all along. There are three main findings this year. First, cannabis use among college students in 2020 was at an all-time high over the past 40 years. In particular, daily marijuana use, defined as using on 20 or more occasions in the past 30 days, increased to 8% in 2020, an all-time high and showing a significant increase over the past 5 years. So as of 2020, almost 1 in 12 college students is a daily marijuana user, up from about 1 in 20 in 2015. Now, daily marijuana use is a clear health risk. The brain is still developing in the early 20s. And as the Surgeon General and others have reported, the scientific evidence indicates that heavy marijuana use can be detrimental to cognitive development and mental health. And we know from our research and that of others that heavy marijuana use is associated with poor academic performance and dropping out of college. And for those non-college, daily marijuana use may interfere with getting a foothold on the roles and responsibilities of young adulthood. Of course, the landscape of cannabis use is changing, so continued research is needed regarding possible negative consequences of heavy use. The second main finding is a continued increase in hallucinogen use, including LSD, psilocybin mushrooms, and other psychedelic substances. Annual use of hallucinogens increased significantly for college students between 2019 and 2020 to 9%, the highest it's been since 1982. This continued increase in the use of hallucinogens corresponds with a decrease in perceptions that hallucinogens are harmful. We've seen that among our young adults, and it also is true for society at large. The third main finding is a big drop in college drinking in 2020. Among college students, 30-day alcohol use decreased by a significant 6 percentage points between 2019 and 2020 to 56%, an all-time low over the past 40 years. Binge drinking, defined as 5 or more drinks in a row at least once in the past 2 weeks, declined a significant 8 percentage points between 2019 and 2020 to 24%, also an all-time low in the past 4 decades. Again, these are large declines in just 1 year, among the greatest one-year changes we've seen for 40 years. I want to say that for both of these measures of drinking, the trends between 2015 and 2019 for college students were fairly level, suggesting that the large decreases between 2019 and 2020 reflect likely pandemic effects due to reduced social time with college friends.
All right, so I am not saying the increased marijuana use is necessarily a good thing, because I imagine that a lot of these youngsters are self-medicating, right? And probably some things that need to be addressed that are not being addressed that the drugs are kind of accounting for. And this is something I think that's interesting, at least for me, when I look back on college and we know people about like how much drinking and how much partying people did in college or whatever. And I can look back and recognize, oh, wow, that was a significant level of self-medication that was going on here, right? Like, we think about it just being wild and loose and having a great time. But a lot of that is going to college, kind of terrifying when you really stop and think about it, right? You leave your house for the first time. You're around all these people. You don't know any of them. And now we got to make some friends and all of this, you know, and everything else. And like, as a dude, and there are girls here and not everybody knows how to act around them by the time they get to college. I know I sure didn't, like all that stuff. And what happens is people then wind up drinking. And I've said this about alcohol many times. I do not drink. It's not a moral situation. I just don't think it's really a great idea. I don't like to do things I have to moderate. That's just, I don't have a moderate personality, right? Like, that's what it really comes down to. But all this drinking that we do as a society is not a good thing. And I always say, if I told you like the side effects of drinking, not even the side effects, but like talked about being drunk with somebody and then talked about a terrible headache the next day or throwing up that night and all of that stuff. If I told you about something that made you feel that way and it was anything other than alcohol, you'd never do it again. Like, I feel pretty confident in that. You probably would never do it again, right? You would deem it as all these other things. But alcohol is so like baked into everything that we do that we don't think about alcohol in that way. So yeah, I look at it and say, hey, less drinking, probably good thing. However, all those things I pointed out that like move people to do all that drinking involve social interaction, like getting out there, talking to your peers. Gabe, it don't sound like this generation do a whole lot of that. Right? Like, it's a lot more people smoking weed at the crib by themselves than people getting blitzed drinking at the crib by themselves. You feel what I'm saying here? And like, I hear this and I'm like, okay, I do want y'all to go hang out with each other. Right? I even recommend, and yes, I said recommend. It's called sex. Kind of hard to do by yourself. They want to do it too. Who's they? Whoever the they is that you want to do it with. I'm just here to tell you. They want to do it too. You got to get out there to give it a try. But yes, that is largely what I heard there. And a little surprised about the LSD and mushroom thing. Like that's, you know, I got to admit, that's white people drugs. So I don't really know too much about like the world and like where you go get them. Like, you know, I wouldn't be the person that could tell you that much as a youngster about how that goes. I don't remember that. I knew who the weed man was in college. I even knew who was selling bootleg Drake. I did not know who the mushroom man was. That never came up.
Do you think that this is any sort of response to what people like deem the online generation? People are more introverted now. They're not going out as much.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a big part of it, is all of those things. The center of your world is a computer. Like when I think about my social interaction at this point in my life, like the computer is really largely the center of it. Like I got a different set of friends and, you know, I grew up under a different paradigm. So I probably, you know, exist in a little different way. But no, man, the computer is the center, and what it allows you to do, and I don't think people quite catch this, it allows you to receive attention without having to give it to anybody. Or like you can give a little bit of attention here, a little bit of attention there, and then people are cobbling the little bits that they receive all into like feeling like they've been seen or noticed. But it really allows for, in the aggregate, for these things maybe to come together and be zero sum, but each individual, you can get a lot more than you give. And that's not really easy to do in real life.
All right. This last story also comes from health.
I'm Emma Ackerman. I'm a reporter for Vice News. The saga involving Nicki Minaj's cousin's friend's swollen testicles truly knows no limit. The health minister for Trinidad and Tobago, Terence Dalesing, was recently forced to acknowledge that, quote, claims are being made, unquote, about the coronavirus vaccine's effect on both testicles and impotence. Those claims, basically, were Minaj's tweets. In a series of posts on the social media platform September 13th, Minaj said her cousin in Trinidad wouldn't get the vaccine because his friend had gotten it, became impotent, and even had his wedding called off. Now, to be sure, Minaj acknowledged she'll probably have to get the vaccine eventually because she has to go on tour, but these comments were related to her not attending the Met Gala over its vaccination requirement. A few days later, since the cousins, or supposed cousins, faced in Trinidad, Dalesing came out and said his team had looked into the swollen ball claims and found nothing. No adverse ball health events, no negative testicle-related side effects, and you get the point. He also said the team had wasted time looking into this, since health officials take all claims seriously. Meanwhile, in the U.S., Anthony Fauci, the country's top infectious disease expert, said he didn't blame Minaj for anything, but he also dismissed her claims.
All I'm saying is this. Days after she sent this tweet, people were still talking about it and had the nerve to say that she was the one that was stupid. We don't have to do this. We don't have to indulge in this. We don't have to acknowledge this. We don't have to do, like, look, Tucker Carlson wound up having her back on Fox News and being like, yeah, these are the things that happened, da, 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 all this stuff. How do you think Tucker Carlson found out about this? Like, how do you think Tucker Carlson even knows that this tweet was sent? Tucker Carlson knows that this tweet was sent because the people who ostensibly hate Tucker Carlson made this into a bigger story than it had to be. And then it lands on Tucker Carlson's lap. And next thing you know, it's going up to Fauci and everything else. Right. This is my somewhat unpopular opinion on the Nicki Minaj thing. That, you know, the my cousin in Trinidad type stuff. You know how I feel about, you know, foolishness like that. But the first tweet was, I'm not getting vaccinated. I need to do my research, which of course I rolled my eyes at, but I need to do my research. But the next part was mask up and be safe. And I got to say, I appreciated that part. Like, yeah, we would really like more people to get vaccinated. Absolutely. But the one thing that we can do is if people are not going to get vaccinated, those people do need to understand that they need to get their mask on something serious, right? Because there are, for example, there are some people who simply cannot be vaccinated. Like there are legit health reasons that they are not able to be vaccinated. Those people need to mask up because this thing is real out here in the field. A lot of these people that are on the super anti-vaccine program, it's not like they're like, I'm against vaccines because I'm going to wear a mask and take care of myself. Nah, they out here naked face in the streets all the time. You see what I mean? Like, as while I thought that what she said was ridiculous, and I get to a degree the argument that people have about there are people who are influenced by Nicki Minaj, she needs to be more responsible and everything else, we made this into a more problematic thing. We made this tweet more infectious, right? Like we sent this tweet out to more people. We set it up to where people are showing up to rallies with Nicki Minaj flags and all of this stuff. We in the masses did that by amplifying somebody that we didn't have to pay any attention to. Somebody that we did not have to amplify. And you could say, well, her fans, you know, they listen to her. Her fans were going to be on that tweet, right? You weren't going to change her fans' minds. That could have stayed contained within that world if you wanted it to be. Instead, we wound up creating a martyr out of her, of all people. We don't have to do this. And I don't think it accomplished anything. It felt like concern trolling, right? You know, well, no, but you got these people who listen to her. Well, let's get to the fact that people listen to her. How about that? Like, that is a clear sign of where it is that we went wrong. And that is before we get to the whole thing of people noticing that she tends to start up stuff like this when her husband's about to have to go to court behind whatever sexual malfeasance led to him having to deal with the criminal justice system. But it's on us. We have to be honest about this. We boost up people who don't deserve it so that we can call them stupid and make ourselves feel smart as a result. And that's how this gets all the way up to Anthony Fauci. Because I feel like this, and I could be wrong. If this had just been a Twitter thing, how many people in the streets would have really even known that this happened in the first place? How many people were like, yo, Nicki Minaj says she's not getting vaccinated. I was correct. Have you met that person? Do you know that person? You might know the person that was like, yo, they doing Nicki wrong. You might know the person that's like, hey, I agree with Nicki Minaj. Do you know the person whose mind was changed? Because Nicki Minaj's cousin in Trinidad got what the Trinidadian news reporter referred to as a flat tire. That's all I'm asking. Our greatest voicemails are fueled by Gatorade. Whatever path you take to greatness, Gatorade is there to fuel it. Greatness starts with G.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
Okay, Bo. So in light of this whole Nicki Minaj situation, my cousin's brother's friend said, we decided to do voicemails of hearsay, games of telephone, when you or someone you know said something to someone else and it got down the chain. And we got some interesting responses, I'll say. Not quite exactly like the Nicki situation, but definitely some hearsay situations that were funny or ended very poorly for the person involved. Our first comes from Tim and Chico.
Young woman in my third grade class in Indianapolis, Indiana, back in 1992, came in extremely late one day and told the office when she was checking in that she was late because her uncle got shot and that the guy chased her. And so she went down the street and decided to not come to school until she thought it was safe. Well, this was pre-Columbine, all that, and they had to call the police just to confirm that something had happened. And thanks to that game of telephone, at least with them telling the police and all that stuff. The cop showed up at school, pulled her out of class. So great reminder to just watch what you say.
Yo, what's so funny about hearing that from me is my man said he was calling from Chico. One of my good friends, the homie Kurt, he is from the greater Chico, California area. And oh man, I was excited because his stories about Chico, California are my goodness. Like, Gabe, I imagine you're familiar with Chico, California, or at least heard of it.
Oh yeah, Chico State too.
Yes, something about the fact that it's called Chico. I don't know why that makes every Chico story funnier. Like, if my man would talk about Chico, it'd be like those people on sitcoms where their hometown is like part of the story. It'd be like, look, so back in Chico, I'm like, oh, the edge of my seat. The edge of my seat.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed when Tim and Chico's story wasn't actually about Chico.
But it was a very Chico-like story.
Yeah, it was a very Chico-like story. Girl must have honestly thought that they could tell a lie like that and that it wouldn't get caught up.
Yeah, kids don't think their lies out.
Our next one comes from Dwayne in West Virginia.
Long time listener, love the show. So we had a friend who was a running back for the Giants. Him and Brandon Jacobs was the duo back there. You know, they was earth, wind, and fire. So we sitting around watching SportsCenter and whatnot before we go to the game. So they was talking about how much Eli's game checks be, and they said like 1 point something. So, you know, we get all dressed and all that. We go to the game. A couple shorties come through. So my homeboy, who's been known to tell several fibs in his life, he over rapping with Shorty. Next thing I know, I hear this dude talking about, yeah, you know, the running back, my best friend. You get with me. You know, I got this 1 point something up under my bed right now. Funny thing about it, it was the same number that ESPN was just talking about in relation to Eli's game check. So, you know, we looking at this dude sideways. Next thing I know, 7-8 years later, the girl took the bait, man. She with him. They got two kids. He paying for the mama to live, the daddy to live, the brother to live. He paying for everybody to live. Then several months ago, he going to call me talking about, hey, man, I need to borrow some money, man. I said, what happened to that 1 point something you had up under your mattress, homeboy? Yeah, nothing to say about that one. But you know how people be on them lies, man. Just tell the truth, man. It ain't that serious out here.
So here's the thing for me. I got a pretty good handle on who was on those teams playing running back, right? And simply based on that gentleman's accent, I feel like I know exactly who it is that he is talking about. And that makes it even the more hilarious that he had about here thinking he made $1.5 million. At what point do you have to explain to her? Yeah, baby, I don't make that no more. Right. Because like the move on that is not to come clean. It is the transition. Well, you know, our contracts ain't really guaranteed, you know, since I ain't really been getting the carries like I used to. Yeah, they pay me by the carry. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I gave you how much, like normal, like if I have a big game, I get to 1.5.
Like I said, this segment ended up becoming the just wildest lies.
Whatever works.
So, I mean, I guess like Nikki was telling a
lie. It was a wild
lie. I guess in that lie. So,
yeah, whatever works.
We're in the ballpark, right?
Beggars can't be choosers. You know what I'm saying? Because this part of our podcast is us begging every week.
This last one, the guy didn't leave his name, but it's a good one to close us out.
Yo, so one time me and my homeboy was at an after party in college. It was a house party. We out there kicking it. Things kind of settled down and people start to leave. But, you know, folks still lingering around. We're like, we're looking for my man. And we overhear this other dude that we know talking to this girl. And we're like, okay. He put in a game. And then we both hear at the same time this guy say, well, you know, I did write the theme song or the chant for Operation Push. And once he said that, me and my best friend both looked at each other at the same time like, what did he just say? And we're like, we can't believe this is happening because we both from Chicago. Dude that said it's from Chicago. And we're like, since when does Operation Push have a theme song? And why would they go to him to write it? Anyway, we had to joke about it on the ride home. But we ain't say anything at that time because we didn't want to be hating on him. But it was just like a running joke ever since. Like, you know, I wrote the theme song for Operation Push. That should be a good thing. Anyway, that's my story on hearsay. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
Now, Gabe, are you familiar with Operation Push?
I am not.
Operation Push is basically Jesse Jackson's Rainbow Coalition. Like, that's the Jesse Jackson operation. I didn't know they had a theme song either. There's nothing quite like when your boy just drop a lie and you're like, yo, are we supposed to carry this for you? Like, wow, I didn't know this was a lie you told. Like, yeah, baby, I did the theme song for Operation Push. Hum it. I mean, I charge for that.
I mean, that's the different thing about putting out a lie on Twitter versus just saying it around friends at a party. People save deleted tweets. They archive that stuff. It's in the public record.
Yes. Yes. It's at the Library of Congress. They ready for you. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this three times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thanks to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Dalvin Brown of The Washington Post. Check out his story about the Roomba vacuum and some privacy issues with that. Thanks to Emma Ackerman of Vice. Check out her story about Nicki Minaj's cousin's friend with flat tire at vicenews.com. And thanks to the University of Michigan for their annual Monitoring the Future research study that we got to talk about here. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.